All right, everybody, I am back, and I do have Mr. Dave Crenshaw on the line. Sorry for the delay there, and we're good to go. Dave, how you been, man?
Great. Fantastic.
Awesome, man. Well, we got some great content to cover today. Dave, I don't want to read your bio, but let's obviously you put out two best-selling books, The Myth of Multitasking, Invaluable. You speak all around the world. You consult. Let's talk about why don't you tell us a little bit more the bullet points of top accolades, because everybody on this call wants to hear that. And then why don't we talk a little bit first about what led you into that path? Because as you know, my clients obviously who I'm online are looking, to follow paths like yourself. How do you become the speaker author you did? How do you become the celebrity marketplace? And I know obviously, I know a lot of people in the speaker author writing world, and I don't know anyone who fulfills your niche. So I think it's a great niche. And so why don't we start there, and then we'll start digging in some heavier content as well.
Okay, sure. Yeah, well, I started out as a business coach about 13 years ago, so 98 is when I began. But most recently, my first book came out in 2008, The Myth of Multitasking. And since that point, things have really taken off for me. I've been in Time Magazine, Forbes, MSN Money, SiriusXM Radio, lots of different places, lots of great publicity. And also recently have a training course on lynda.com, and we'll be having more coming out very soon. So, those are the accolades. Actually, there's one that I'm most proud of, though, which is that Chuck Norris is my biggest fan.
That's right. Yeah, I did tell everybody that in my emails to get on the call. I said, hey, Chuck Norris quotes this guy, so you got to be on the call.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when my wife sent me that email, like, what are you talking about? And then it turned out he quoted me in his official fact book. So there you go. If you don't like this interview, just remember that Chuck will come over to your house and give you 10 reasons why you should like this interview.
So let's start talking about what brought you to the writing process, and then at what point in your career did you decide to write the book The Myth of Multitasking, and what made you think people would want a book like that?
Well, what led me to it was just my experience working with entrepreneurs, with small business owners in particular, because they have so many different job descriptions. It puts them in a situation where they're forced to multitask constantly. So one of the things that I started doing with my clients was helping them get in control of their time and actually get more productive. And it was from me developing a program and then working with my clients that I realized, man, I've just got so many stories built up from this. I knew that I always wanted to write a book for a very long time. I wanted to write a book, and it just seemed like, boy, all this material just landed in my lap, and so I smashed all the stories together and created a story format book, what's often called a business fable, and then that's where the book came from. And I knew when I decided to write it that I had something that was very current, very relevant on people's minds, and that also there was a bit of controversy behind it, especially at the time when it came out. So I knew that it would be easier to get attention because of the controversy behind it. I grew up around the talk radio industry. My dad was actually a talk radio host, so I kind of understand how the media mindset works. And I knew that I had something that I could run with and get a lot of publicity with, and it's turned out that way.
Absolutely has. So, all right, cool. So why don't we run through a few of the principles that you teach in the book, and as long as we have time, I want to go through some of the things that are invaluable, and then I also want to talk about how you've leveraged that into growing your business as well, because, again, that's what we help our clients do, and I love showing success stories that, you've done that. So let's talk about some of the principles from Invaluable and from Myth of Multitasking, and why don't you walk people through like you said, you told it as a, a story. Why don't you walk us through the story a little bit and help us understand some of the principles from the book?
Okay, well, the story is following a consultant or a coach going into the office of a CEO. And the CEO is stressed out because she doesn't have enough time. She feels like she can't keep on top of everything that she has to do. Well, the premise behind it is that the reason why she's behind, and this is what I find in true life, is that she's multitasking constantly. And when you multitask, what's really taking place is that you're switching rapidly back and forth between tasks. So if I'm trying to have an interview with you, let's say right now, and I'm looking at my computer screen, which I'm not, I turned it off for the interview. But if I was trying to do both of those things at the same time, I would not be doing both at the same time. I'd be switching back and forth rapidly between them. And when you have all those little switches going back and forth, you incur a lot of switching costs. And there are four effects from switch tasking. Number one, things take longer. Number two, you make mistakes. Number three, your stress levels increase. And then the fourth one, and I get into that a little bit later in the book when you see the interaction between some employees, is that it damages relationships really badly when you multitask. So a lot of the problems that people are experiencing right now in terms of not feeling like they have enough time, feeling always behind, feeling disconnected from the world around them, all of that comes down to this fact that they've bought in to the cultural myth of multitasking.
Got it. And so the myth is that there's no such thing as multitasking. Your take on it is that it's really switch tasking, and you're really just switching back and forth rapidly, and you're not doing either one very well.
Exactly. And there's lots of scientific evidence that backs this up, and I have all of that cited in the bibliography in the book, but I wrote it in an accessible form because my experience is that even though people may have heard at some point, there are studies that say you can't multitask, the intellectual acknowledgement hasn't changed their day-to-day behavior. So that's really
absolutely
what this is about. It's about changing behavior.
And I'm sure everyone on the call, except for you, still hasn't made those behavioral changes. We'll leave it there. So let's dig in deeper. So based on what you're saying, so multitasking is not a reality nor efficient. Some would say, but aren't there times when it does work?
Yeah, well, the most common thing is where someone says, well, what if I'm running on a treadmill and watching TV at the same time? That's actually not what I define as switch tasking. That's part of the problem with multitasking. It's just a bad word. It doesn't have real meaning. So what I call that is background tasking. When you're doing something in the background that doesn't require effort and attention, it can actually be productive. So things that are on autopilot, or even just, putting something in the microwave and letting it cook for 5 minutes while you do something else, that's background tasking. That can be efficient. But the problem is most of the time when people say, I'm good at multitasking, what they're trying to do is multiple active tasks at the same time, and that's always inefficient and always causes mistakes.
Okay, I can see that. All right, so some people, I've heard you say, that some people would even brag they're good multitaskers and they're great at it. And what do you say to those folks?
Well, the thing that I do, rather than, telling them that they're wrong, is I take them through an exercise. And it's an exercise that all of your listeners can take for free. You don't have to opt in to get to it or anything. If you just go to davecrenshaw.com/exercise, you'll see a video where I walk people through it. But in 2 minutes, you can illustrate firsthand to anyone who thinks that they're a good multitasker all of those effects.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm sure everyone will go check it out, and they should, because I think it's a valuable exercise. Okay, so obviously one of the hardest parts right now for all of us is technology. I mean, we're between living our lives and now trying to keep up with all of our quote-unquote friends on Facebook and Twitter and people texting us and everything else. I mean, do you feel like technology is making us have to multitask more?
It's a great question, and the answer that I come with is that technology is not the problem. It's our improper use of technology that's the problem, and that's a really important distinction because a lot of people will look at their cell phones and say, my life is so much easier before I had a cell phone. Well, that's not the problem. If you go to the average person and say, do you know how to do all of the functions that your phone is capable of doing? People don't know. They're so busy that they're not taking the time to learn how to use the technology tools that they actually have. So really my focus is on retraining people on how to use the resources that they have in a much more productive and effective way. So technology isn't the problem.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I think there's often people ask me, like I'll hear about really great new tools like Evernote or even a Twitter or a Facebook or something. And so people often you know, they'll tell me about it and say, hey, how's it going for you? Because they're, like, really excited about it. And I'll say, you know, I know it's a great tool, but I haven't found a way to work it into my workflow. So I know the tool's good. It's just I haven't had the time to figure out how to use it effectively. And I think that's exactly what you're saying there. It's just, you know, another example of it's just, you know, the tool, they're great tools. But until you figure out how to systemize it and make it part of your workflow, then it can just, you know, a new system can throw you into all sorts of, you know, all sorts of crazy spins, right? So.
Right, exactly.
Okay, cool. And so let's be candid for a second. Which groups of people do you think suffer the most from this myth of multitasking? I certainly have a few guesses at it, but I'd love to hear what you think.
Sure. Well, obviously the group that I started with, entrepreneurs in general, have a really hard time with it because of the different demands of their time and because they have so many different job descriptions. Interestingly, I find that the group that I'm talking to the most and that really resonates the most with my message and gets the biggest benefit are women, particularly women in business and business owner, women entrepreneurs, because they have an even stronger desire to properly balance the demands of having, say, a family and having their business at the same time. So the majority of the clients that I work with still, like on a CEO coaching basis, are women, and in particular moms, because it's just there's so many extra demands that they have that you and I, Nick, not being a mom, we just don't have to deal with to the same degree. And then I would just say more of a personality trait. I do see salespeople have a hard time with it, and this is more personality less than job description. They just have the tendency to jump around from task to task and opportunity to opportunity very, very quickly.
Well, because they're opportunity seekers. At the bottom line, that's what a salesperson is, right? I mean, you're excited by the next opportunity. So when one gets hard and you see an easier one, it's you know, human nature to jump to the next one. So I could certainly...
Yeah, unfortunately, that gets in the way of the follow-through. A lot of it.
I certainly... Yeah, there's starters and there's finishers. That's where that comes from, right?
Yeah.
Well, cool. And so, yeah, I was about to ask you about, you know, the whole moms and women multitasking thing, because it certainly has always been kind of a myth that they could and we couldn't. But I see your point. And obviously you're saying that, you know, it's the same for everybody, but they, you know, women and moms have a different they have different pressures that force them even more to, whether they're personality driven to do it or not, that seems like they need to be able to multitask. So, well, I mean, let me ask you this. So, I mean, how does a woman or a mom or even a man, I mean, but we're talking about women and moms for a second. I mean, you know, we just had our third baby. She's a month old, and we have two others. And, I mean, I know you've got a gaggle of children as well. You know, what do you say, like, I mean, is it just better planning that can allow you to stop trying to multitask? Because obviously you're trying to help one kid do his homework. You're trying to cook dinner. You're trying to, you know, your mom's calling you on the phone just to check to make sure the kids didn't kill each other while you're trying to cook dinner. I mean, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with living at peace with the truth of time. And I jokingly tell my clients that they pay me the big bucks to tell them the truth of time. And the truth of time is there are only 24 hours in a day. There are only 60 minutes in an hour. And then at that point, I'll usually say, okay, and you can send the check to my office. Thank you very much. But the reality is most people are living at war with the truth of time, and they'll never win that battle. Whenever you try to cram 25 hours worth of activity into a 24-hour day, you lose, and you put yourself in a position where you're trying to multitask, which means you actually get less done, and you make more mistakes, and your stress levels increase. So it comes down to really becoming very realistic about how many hours you have in the day and making some hard choices about what you're going to devote your attention to during that day. I talk a lot about living within a time budget. And you think about a money budget, the purpose of a budget is to make sure that you don't go into debt, that you don't overspend. Well, when you overspend time, when you try to cram that extra 5 minutes in to a 60-minute hour, you end up overspending and you go into debt. And whenever you have debt, you have to repay with interest. For instance, if I borrow from sleep to pay work, repeatedly, that takes a big toll on my body, and I have to repay that with interest, meaning I get less done. I have to work harder than I would have had to if I had gone to bed at a reasonable hour. If I borrow from a date with my wife to pay work, you can't tell me I'm not going to have to repay that with interest over a long period of time, right?
Yep.
And that's you know, when you're going down to, regardless of your role, mom, dad, business owner, salesperson, whatever it is, regardless of your role, you want to start living by the truth that happiness comes from spending 5 minutes less than what you have, not 5 minutes more or every single minute.
Very interesting. Just a great take on that. Wow, that's bold and tough advice, but very practical. So good stuff, man. All right, so this is an interesting one that I've heard you talk a little bit about before. You know, nobody would really argue that it's dangerous to that it's not dangerous to text and drive at the same time. It's obviously a bad habit that, you know, due to demands and lack of ability to say no, many of us get caught in it. But, you know, so nobody would argue that that's not a bad idea. I think we're all there. But what about talking on the phone while you're driving? Is that bad too?
You know, there have been lots of studies. In fact, probably the most publicized one is from the University of Utah, where they found that driving while talking on your phone is as dangerous as driving while intoxicated. And the reason why isn't necessarily that your judgment is impaired. It's because of the switching cost. It's because of the reaction time. So if I'm having a conversation on my cell phone and something unexpected happens on the road, I am going to respond much slower than necessary. So really where I come from on that issue is to say, you know, just consider where you are. If you're going through traffic, if you're going through situations where it's busy and lots of things can come up unexpected, then you're creating a situation where you're going to switch tasks, and I'd recommend you don't talk on the phone. If you're driving for long periods of time stretched out on an empty highway with no cars around you, then the risk is not there. So you really have to ask yourself, am I background tasking or am I switch tasking?
Okay, cool. I dig that. All right. Now let's talk about the effect of multitasking in business. So obviously you're CEO coach. So, I mean, just tell us, how much money do you think is going down the drain in most businesses because of multitasking?
Well, the average person loses 28% of their time due to switches and switching costs. And that number comes from a study by BaseX Research out of New York. They use the term interruption and recovery time from associations, but it's the same thing. Now, 28%, that's an interesting number, but think about it this way. That's an entire work week every single month that you're losing doing nothing. I'm not even talking about losing sitting around dinking on the internet watching cats laughing, okay? This is doing nothing. It is simply transition time, 1 week out of every month. If you have employees, that means that 1 week that you're paying them to work is useless. It's garbage. You didn't get anything for that time that you're paying. So where I'm coming from with people is I can't completely get rid of the switches, but we can reduce it greatly. Usually we can get it down to, you know, somewhere around 5% to 10% of their time is spent in switches. So that's a pretty significant gain in terms of time and productivity when you're getting back 20% or close to an entire work week every single month.
Wow, that's incredible and frustrating. So some practical advice needs to be taken off of this. So we'll get to some practical tips in a second. I mean, I've often heard, you know, ADD, ADHD, multitasking linked to each other. Do you think one fuels the other? I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, here's the interesting thing. I was diagnosed as, and this is word for word from the psychologist, freaking off the charts ADHD. And so I know what this is all about. The reality is ADHD, and sometimes it's called ADD, but the correct term is ADHD, it is a genetic condition. It is passed from parent to child. Unless there are symptoms of it prior to age 7, you don't have it. And only about 4 to 8% most of the population actually have it. So when most people say that they have ADD, what they really have is what I call short attention span syndrome, or SAS. And SAS is a learned behavior. It's something that you have conditioned yourself to do over time because of this constant jumping back and forth. You can condition your brain to behave as if you have ADHD. The great thing is, because you can condition your brain to not be to behave that way, you can do the reverse. You can condition your brain to not think that way, and you can get out of that cycle that you.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Well, love that. So let's say I'm convinced and I want to stop multitasking, want to help others around me stop multitasking. I mean, can you give me a few tips, practical tips that can help me overcome it?
Sure. Well, the first place to look is, how can we reduce the number of switches in the day? How can we reduce the number of temptations that are in front of you to cause your attention to pull away from whatever you're working on. So the first most obvious place is messaging, whether that's email or text messages. Whenever you get a message, are you getting instant notification that that message came in? Are you getting a beep or a buzz or something flashing on your screen? If you are, then you're creating a situation that's setting you up for failure right from the beginning. You're conditioning your brain to switch. So the first place is to just turn off those instant notifications. Give yourself the freedom to focus on what you're doing by removing those things. And then instead, have a regularly scheduled time to check your email and to process those things on a regular schedule on your timetable rather than the computer's timetable.
Dig that. Great advice. Okay, cool. Hey, I wanted to go into invaluable, but I'm sure I've probably got some questions. Either way, I think people have a lot to chew on. So actually, as long as you're cool with it, let's because Invaluable is another great book. I'd love to just hold that off for another time when we can get, you know, people
sure.
online to talk about something totally different. I don't want to switch task on and going from one great book to another.
Nice.
So let's you like that? So let's see if you have a question and you're on the call. Dial *2 to raise your hand. I can unmute you. Don't be bashful. There's got to be one great question, one burning question you have. *2 again if you want to ask a question, and I will unmute you, and you can go ahead and ask Dave. You know, Dave normally bills at $1,000 an hour or more. So if you have a question, now's the chance to get to pick his brain for free. So dial *2. I'll give you a few minutes to decide if you want to ask questions or not. If not, I'm not going to force you. It's not a big deal. But, Dave, I mean, while I'm waiting for people to raise their hand, if they can raise their hand, why don't you tell people a little bit about how they can find more about you and, you know, if they wanted to learn even more about that, about what else you can do to help them, where can they go?
Sure. Well, there are two places, and I'll tell you the place I really want you to go. One is you can just go to my site, davecranshaw.com, and if you misspell it, you still should be able to get there, but just in case, it's davecranshaw.com. That's my blog. I'm putting out video resources. But my request is that you go to davecranshaw.com/connect. And what that is, I mean, part of what I teach is what raises your value in the marketplace is your ability to connect with other people. So when I speak, do an interview like this, I want to be able to connect with you. I'd like to connect with you on LinkedIn, and when you put your information in there, we'll contact you and send you an invitation so you can connect to my pretty vast network on LinkedIn. And then we'll also send you a free ebook and MP3 so that you can learn how to become invaluable. And then if you're interested in having me speak or coach, there's a little place where you can indicate that. But it's just a way for me to stay connected with those of you who had an opportunity to hear this interview.
Awesome. Okay, cool. So looks like we have some bashful callers. So I'm going to ask you just a couple more questions because I really want to go into this side.
Okay.
So you obviously became a figurehead in this world of multitasking. And now let's talk about the business implications of that. I know now you've started working with other people to kind of certify them and being able to coach in this area. So do you mind just addressing that business for us a little bit and kind of how that came about and what you're doing with it?
Well, we have a program where I started teaching people how to do the productivity coaching. To be frank, that's something that I've actually phased out. So sorry for putting you on the spot on that. It's something that we're doing
fine.
Less of now.
Okay.
And really the reason for that is because of all the other opportunities that I have that are really pressing on my time. And one of the things I talk about in Invaluable is focusing on your most valuable activity. Every person really has only about two things that bring the most value to their bottom line. And so for me, what's bringing the biggest value besides working one-on-one with my coaching clients, the other is the licensing of my training programs.
Okay.
So that's really where my emphasis is right now, is where the training program that I've been delivering to people for so long, I'm actually getting that into the hands of other companies through contracts where they're presenting it to their people, to their platform, and then I'm just receiving royalties off of the views.
Well, that's interesting. So okay, cool. So well, first of all, I mean, I love the frank and honesty. I mean, it's just that's what everybody wants to hear. Everybody on the call here is here to grow their business. And hey, look, I'll be the first one to tell you that I've had plenty of ideas that didn't go the way I thought they would go, whether they were good ideas or not. You're right. I mean, sometimes you just can't do it all at one time. I mean, I just had to cancel something I was about to launch because I'm like, look, I mean, if we do that, it'll pull me. I'll be marketing two things that not directly compete, but they definitely will be. It'll be harder to fill one because there'll be another one, and that's pulling people away from it. So I totally get that.
Exactly.
But in the same vein, so it seems like before, and this is a great lesson for people who have content, because everybody on the call pretty much is best-selling authors too, is that you are you were trying to take your content to another level, and at one you decided to try it with basically going to a retail market, it sounds like. I mean, it's B2B per se, but a retail market in that you were selling certification, be able to coach on these types of things, and go out and find your own audience, and you can make money doing what I'm doing. And now instead, you've gone to kind of more to a corporate environment where you're saying, hey, you're not going to certify them, but you're actually licensing the content. So you're effectively doing the same thing. You're leveraging the content even further. You're just doing it in a different way, but you're still allowing other people to teach your content, and you're going to get paid for it.
Right. Well, and the nice thing is too, I mean, coming from where what you teach people is, I allow myself to maintain the authority by doing that. So you know, people are seeing me be the one to deliver it, which in turn raises its value. I mean, we were doing great things with certifying the coaches, and I think if you talk to all of them, they'd say, you know, it was really helpful for their business. But it was not the most valuable way of doing it. It was not leveraging my time to the degree that it could be, and really we were ending up helping less people in the long run. So by licensing, I can actually reach a lot more people, help a lot more people, get these stories back from people where they're saying, man, you changed my life. Everything's so much better. And that's part of it, too. You know, one of the things I teach is you need to have a cause. And I know that's something that you're really big in, Nick. I mean, the cause that you did recently with what's the name of the movie? I apologize.
Oh, Jacob Stern. Yeah. No worries.
Yeah, Jacob Stern. Yeah, so I know that you understand that. And part of my cause is I want to help parents spend more time with their children. Too many people are working too long hours, and they know they're working too long hours, but they don't know how to get out of it. So I want to be able to have as many people as can have that opportunity to spend more time with their children, because I think parental involvement solves the majority of the problems that kids have now.
Absolutely, man. That's killer. Well, hey, bashful callers miss out, but they didn't miss out because we got lots of awesome content, man. Dave, as always, man, great friend, great content. Wow, I'm blown away. The stuff's great. I know you're going to be changing a lot of lives, not only that are just on this call, but of other people who will hear this, read this, and the other things you do. So thanks for all that you do, man. Thanks for being on the call, taking the time with us. And I can't wait to see you again in a few months. I'm sure I'll see you at Sang or somewhere else. So be well in the meantime, and thanks for joining us.
Great. Thanks a lot, Nick.
All right, man. Take care.